Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. This year, here at WBUR, we've been looking back at the 40th anniversary of court-ordered busing to desegregate Boston schools. That process began in June 1974, when Judge Arthur Garrity ordered thousands of students bused to different schools around the city with the goal of creating racial balance in the classroom. WBUR's Asma Khalid and Sean Bodden invited some of those students to gather in our studios and tell us about their experience during that time. So they came here to WBUR and shared their very personal stories about what happened in their city and their neighborhoods 40 years ago.
My name is Paul Murphy. I'm a native of the Hyde Park section of Boston.
I'm an Irish-Italian by trade.
I'm Elaine Ng. I grew up in Chinatown and in Roslindale. My family are immigrants.
My name is Bobby, African-American male from Mattapan, and went to Hyde Park. I lost a year.
My name's Joanne Kuhn. I grew up in the projects in Roslindale at Beach Street, and I'm Irish.
My name's Christine Bozeman, born and raised in Boston, and I'm Black, African-American woman. And I felt like I got cheated out of my education. Because once busing kicked in, it was more of a fear of going to school as opposed to an excitement of going to school. I mean, that first day of school, you know, you got your brand new clothes on, and then you get on the bus and you get there and it's like, oh my God, all these signs, and they're throwing rocks and they're spitting at you, and you have police and you have dogs and you have people on their porch, and you're standing there on the bus and you're like, what's going on? You know what I mean? You're really frightened. But we went to school at that beginning to defend ourselves. We didn't go there to get an education. I really wish that there was something else that they could have done to prevent this pain, this hurt. But I try not to keep that as a forefront anymore, because I've learned that that feeling made me not like me.
My name is Joanne, and I'm Irish. And I, too, feel like I lost my education. And I've done some math around this, because I didn't graduate from college until 2001. I should have graduated in 1983. So if you take the 18 years it took me to get my degree, and you just did the math on that at $20,000 a year, that means the city of Boston owes me $360,000. You know, I really think that the implementation of this whole thing hurt everybody. I was on buses on Blue Hill Ave. I was in neighborhoods that people threw stones at our buses because we were white and we were driving through. The same crazy happened in every neighborhood in the city. Mm-hmm. It was crazy. It was hatred. And it was fomented by the leaders of the city at that time, which is shame on them.
I agree.
I would like to add on that. My name is Bobby, African-American male from Mattapan, and went to Hyde Park. And I lost a year because going to Hyde Park, you know, the implementation was all wrong. We were all forced together. There was no planning or anything. And to go to that first day of school at Hyde Park, what we had to deal with, just like in Roslindale, was like, you know, there was folks that didn't want us there. Then going to school in that atmosphere, you had a police officer at every door. You escorted to school, you know, and it was like trying to bring everybody together at lunchtime. I remember we only had lunch for first week of school, because then the riots happened. At Hyde Park, they cut lunch and they cut our periods by 8 minutes a day. So we got out of school every day at 12:33. So we lost a lot of education. The reason why they cut lunch out was to say that's where all the fights used to start. But it was weird because you had the white students on one side, Black students on the other side, and everybody else in the middle.
In the middle were Latinos, Asians, and others.
The history of busing is typically written in Black and white, but it's more than that for Elaine Ng.
Elaine's Asian American, Chinese by ethnicity.
And she was one of the many middle and elementary school students bused during the 1970s.
I'm a little bit younger, I think, than others here. I was an elementary school student during the busing, and I feel like, you know, the same trauma that you all did as high schoolers, except I was younger and I didn't know how to deal with it. And really, you know, I grew up in Chinatown, which is very insular, so I didn't really have much concept of race either. Everybody was Chinese. We were all learning English in school. You know, and my family moved out of Chinatown because in the 70s there was a lot of problems with gangs. So we moved out of Chinatown into what my parents thought were a safer neighborhood of Roslindale, but It was a very, very white community back then. And then all of a sudden I started walking to school. It was a 3-block walk, and it was the longest 3 blocks of my life. I still shake when I think about it because I was a walker who had rocks thrown at me every day. And, you know, nobody to really explain to me why, and, you know, name calling and all of that. And all of my friends in the school were the kids who were bussed in. It was all the people of color, all students of color, hung out together. You know, what went on during those elementary school years for me kind of turned me off of school. And, you know, I was a lackluster student. I had really poor social emotional skills. I also took a long path to college because school, you know, I had so much hatred built inside of me. I was afraid of white people. Ironically, I married a white person, so I've worked through some of those issues. And we've chosen to raise our children in Rossendale. I make sure that they understand kind of the impacts of desegregation and, you know, how that kind of builds into the larger question in Boston around race relations.
We've all heard that the backlash against busing was about race.
But for many of those who lived through it, that opposition was more about class, heavy-handed government, and a desire to protect the neighborhood.
I'm Paul Murphy. I'm an Irish-Italian. When we started painting people as either black or white or putting a race on it, we always had to try to get your arms around exactly what does all that mean, because at the end of the day, it really doesn't mean much of anything. But I think busing pitted everybody against each other in such a way as you had to almost categorize yourself as one or the other. The real crime here is that those are years that, for those of us that participated, you'll never get them back. You can't go back and repeat 8th grade or 6th grade or whatever years you lost, because education was not what it was about. It was kind of like, you know, Vietnam with body counts. It was just how many people can we get together at the same time, protect them, make sure they get there on time, and make sure they get home. And education really, unfortunately, was out the window. It was in no one's metric until much, much later. So I think that's the biggest problem, is it kind of artificially, you know, disrupted the fabric of otherwise a very vibrant city. At that point, people that had school-age children fled the city.
Every nationality said, my kid can't go to school here. I got to move.
So it's the thing you can't roll the dice with, is your kid's education. It's what you hold most dear.
Everybody that had the means by 1977 removed their children from Boston Public Schools because it's your kids and that's what you would do. And, you know, for those people that were economically disadvantaged, you know, it was devastating.
In June of 1974, Judge W. Arthur Garrity ruled that the Boston Public Schools had failed to integrate.
So as a temporary fix, the judge ordered busing to begin immediately.
The saying is, you know, fail to plan, plan to fail. And the city council and Judge Garrity and everybody else that was involved at the time, not only did they fail to plan, they actively pursued a course where no planning could go on. And then they implemented a strategy that they knew ahead of time didn't work. And if you looked at it today, if you were playing your little Sims game on the computer, and you were looking at some communities and you decided you wanted to diversify them, you would not pick South Boston High and say, we're going to change those kids out with these kids at Dorchester High. I mean, you would say, you know, let's do it a better way. Let's pick this school over here, Rosendale High, that's a little more balanced, and balance them with the kids that are in the magnet school at wherever, you know.
I agree to a point, but I would say that we're on dangerous ground as soon as you say good idea, badly executed, or bad idea, well-intentioned. Cities change all the time. Boston has changed 30, 50 times since it was first founded. And then we all come and collect in certain places, and then naturally, through just natural forces, people do, you know, diversify. You don't have to force it unless there is some criminal activity going on where there truly is thou shalt not be on this side or that side of a line based on your race. The demographics will take care of themselves. The government really shouldn't be in the business of moving people or even reassigning people based on what they think is a good idea. That's a dangerous kind of abdication of what we want government to be doing. Focus on making the schools good, quality schools, regardless of the colors of teacher or whoever they are, is make them as best school as they can be.
You know, they knew what they were doing, but they didn't know what they were doing. And we all suffered from that. Our kids suffered from that. until this day, we're in our 50s here, we still got issues. You know, but we made a choice to better ourselves. I mean, we could have went the other way. I mean, there was some people back in those days who quit school, dropped out of school, became drug addicts, became drug dealers, or whatever you want to call them, because they didn't know where else, which way to go.
Busing in Boston was an uncontrolled experiment in social engineering.
As city officials scrambled to comply with the judge's order, they focused on logistics, but not the emotional and psychological well-being of the students.
When you look at the busing, I mean, there was no back then, no psychologists. There was nobody that we could identify with to talk about what was going on. I mean, you had your parents. I mean, if it wasn't for your parents, you know, we talked every day on what was going on. And, you know, every day, it was almost like embedded in a war zone. You get used to it. Mm. And that's basically what it was. Like, you know, we got up in the morning. We knew there was a police escort that was going to take us from Elmont Street, go up to Walk Hill, go down, come around, go to Hyde Park. You know, the police would be there. Drop off, you know, who's going to the high school. Then we go up to the annex. And then if there was ever a riot, you heard, don't go near the windows. And then when you got on the bus, duck down,
duck
you know.
Down.
So, I mean,
don't
so it was like,
yeah.
It was just like, what you know, what when you're in a crime zone or a drug zone, you know, you get, eventually you get used to it. And that's what it was. And a funny piece was I played sports. We had to practice at Ross Field. But, you know, the funny thing was we really wasn't scared about being out at Ross Field because, you know, we had police around and we had the school bus to take us to Mattapan. And this was a true fact, was that the coaches would say, I don't care what you all do in school, but when you come out here, we're one. And everybody's looking at one another like, are you really serious? You know what I mean? Like, you know, are you serious right now? You know what I mean? So that's some of the stuff we had to deal with. So
they didn't give our parents a choice. They sent us our school assignment in the mail, and that's where you went, and that's where you had to go. No matter what your parents say, that's where you were going. Mm-hmm. You had no choice. We all thought after getting out of middle school that we were all going to go to the same school. Oh, well, you're going to Hyde Park. Well, I'm going to Rossendale, and I'm going, wait a minute, how did that happen? Yeah. It was no clue.
You know, and for parents, it was really hard. I mean, I know my sisters were both, I had two sisters in high school. We all went to different high schools. Wow. I had an aunt who had 8 kids in school. They went to 7 different schools.
That's crazy. Yeah.
And one of them was a thing they called double bust. So he left River Street, took the bus up to a school in Dorchester. When he got to that school, they put him on another bus and took him to a school in Roxbury. But they didn't tell the parents that they were double busing him for 3 weeks.
Yeah, they did that to people in South Boston too.
Yeah.
That's how the kids had to meet at Columbia Point to get on the bus right there, and then the buses took him from South Boston High.
I got bused for one year, and it was the 6th grade, and it was to the Thompson School, which is in Dorchester.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Never heard of it. That's where we're going. So we collected up. You got to realize that none of us had ever taken a bus anyplace, I mean, other than MTA to go somewhere. So it was like, get on bus, go to the I think it was the Oriental Theater
in Mattapan Square.
Mm-hmm. Oriental Theater in Mattapan, and then get in the convoy, and then get the police escort to go, you know, the last tactical mile towards school. And it was the same thing in reverse. I mean, those are things you do with, like, U-boats in World Wars. I mean, for protection, you have to do that. And it was both directions. It was just, it was kind of crazy. But that's the kind of atmosphere you go into. And then when you get there, even coming off a protected school bus, the first thing you do is file in as fast as you can to get to someplace that looks like a homeroom or something. Because if you're in the hallways or you're in the schoolyard, it was just a matter of grouping up and trying to just stay mutually protected. That's all I remember doing, is we just sort of grouped up with the biggest, toughest kids you had. And honestly, and just hope for the best.
Violence was endemic, sometimes as school officials and even the police looked on.
Almost everyone here got into fights, had rocks thrown at them, or had to run a gauntlet of hostile people in unfamiliar neighborhoods.
Both my sister and I were victims of violence in Boston public schools. Violence to the point that each of us was hospitalized separately. So we carry a lot of anger. You know, it is what it is. It happened. It was a terrible time. A net positive. I moved on. One of the things, within 4 or 5 days of when I was attacked, girl that I grew up with in the projects who happened to be black and I had a little discussion, And then she had a discussion with one of my attackers. And after that happened, and I was, whatever, 15, and I was going, this stuff is crazy. And I actually went by her house, and she lived off of Blue Hill Ave, and saw where she lived, what her life was really like. And I realized even then that her and I were the same person. We were just on different sides of this insanity.
You were pitted against me.
So, you know, for me personally, I said, I can't live in this kind of thing. And I joined the military. I moved on.
But even though that incident happened to you, you did not target hatred towards every person of color because of something.
I lived in the projects. I had grown up with people that were... I couldn't go back and hate all the people that I had been friends with for 12 years because somebody else was, you know...
A knucklehead.
But, you know, life experience has taught me not to hold on to bitter, not to hold on to anger, resentment. That's why I said, you know, it was hard for me to comprehend reading. It took me a long time because I was so angry about not learning that I didn't want to learn. That long process it took me just to go back to school because I was afraid that I couldn't learn. I'm proud of myself because I finally went and finished school and got me a BA at UMass Boston in labor studies. So letting go of being afraid to learn allowed me to go forward. And that's another thing that's really positive for all of us, that, you know, we went forward in our lives no matter what the path it was that we had to take. And we still know what happened. We still can remember it like it was yesterday. Are we still hating ourselves or hating the situation? Not as much. Does it still hurt? Of course it's going to hurt. Just like it was, you fell down and bumped and scrapped your leg, it's going to hurt. But it heals. And it's up to each individual to let it heal in their own way.
40 years on, the debate continues as to whether or not busing was necessary in the city of Boston.
The schools were integrated, but not permanently.
The trauma was felt by students and their families. And the damage to Boston's reputation as a progressive and inclusive city still lingers to this day.
So we asked our group of former BPS students if any good came out of it.
I really honestly racked my brain, and I really hadn't come up with anything that was a net positive. If busing had not happened, where would the city be now? I would argue it'd be a lot better, but we'll never be able to turn back, you know, the clock to that particular time or moment in time and stop that train. I'd like to think I could have probably spent a lot more money on in the right places with the right folks. And if this was the city council, I think we'd have everything solved right now. I'm not sure. So I'll stop there.
Can I flip this and say something positive that actually did come out of busing for a second? Once busing came, and then we went to school with people from Mattapan, from Roxbury to Dorchester, and so on and so forth, we all connected because we had to, yeah. We realized we had to stick together.
Yeah. If we had neighborhood schools, I wouldn't have had that experience. You know, my friends would just be from the neighborhood that I lived in. And I went from a very homogenous community to a very heterogeneous community, somewhat heterogeneous. And having that exposure, I think, helped shape my expectations as an adult and, you know, the relationships that I build with people and my perspective.
I would have liked to have had a Mattapan High that could have been like, you know, everybody talks about the neighborhood, like Hyde Park High or Rosendale High. I wish we did that. But one of the things that I got out of it was I was able to go out and branch out outside of Mattapan and learn the city. Because it was always put that if you're riding down and you see those streets with the letters, my father says, stay away, go in the opposite direction. You know, some of those areas don't go into. But I got to go in there and got to know people.
You know, a group of my friends who are all in our late 40s, you know, and it still touches us. We still make decisions based on kind of the baggage that we carry. You know, it's the segregation pieces are still very prevalent today, and, you know, our schools are still pretty segregated.
One of the things that I get to do every Thursday is I get to referee a middle school football game out at Washington Park. And the funny thing is that you see the kids of all nationalities out there, and all they're doing is having fun. They're just having fun. They're not talking about, you know, they're not calling each other out of their name. They're just playing football. So when you think about it, that's good that the city has come around on that. And so I think about that as another good thing that's come out of this, is that, you know, if it was done properly, I think it might have worked out a lot better. We're only five people here that went through this. Imagine all the untold stories that are out there.
Those were Bobby Jenkins, Paul Murphy, Christine Bozeman, Joanne Kuhn, and Elaine Ng talking about their experiences with court-ordered busing in Boston 40 years ago. You can see pictures of them, read more about their stories, and leave your comments at radioboston.org. Our special coverage of the legacy of busing 40 years ago was produced by WBUR's Asma Khalid, Sean Bowden, and George Hicks. Stay with us. Coming up, sports with Bill Littlefield and a conversation with Aerosmith lead guitarist Joe Perry. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. This is Radio Boston.